the more you do, and the more you stretch your limits, the stronger you become. Within the limits of your power, of course. My training had been cut short, so the one thing I didn't know was how much power I really had. After choosing, it was one of the things you normally found out. Masters liked to know such things, even if it left the student exhausted for a week. So, me, clueless. Or, put it another way, I'd need to find out the hard way, when something I tried to do failed dismally. Although the fact I had the last 5 yes votes showed to some extent my potential power. No one had multiples in the last lot without more than normal power, and let's face it, I'd jumped through time, and even with a power assist from others, I couldn't have done it if I didn't have a lot of it. The ship needed cleaning, so I cleaned it, magically. Dust, dirt, grime, marks, debris, all vanished, section by section, at first in small amounts, but over the weeks in bigger and bigger amounts, until the final room cleared with one application of intent. An interesting side effect of doing so much work was my migraines decreased in intensity. As soon as I stopped, they went back to normal. Interesting, if not particularly useful. Once I tried to make something really complicated, on the theory doing so might actually cure my migraine, but it only made it worse. More pondering required. Part of said pondering suggested a key part or material wasn't on the ship, and the stress of trying to create the uncreatable had the reverse of the desired effect. Pondering also scared me to death when I realized if I tried to create something and hull material was used to do it, I might find myself with a hull breach and die shortly after. So I limited my magic to doing things rather than creating things. The most obvious were strengthening shields and practicing being invisible. For the first, I found one of the ray guns, played around with settings until I found which did which, again without danger to the hull, and in the process put some nice big holes in walls. These were quickly patched, and although I wondered where the material came from, I never found where. I practiced shielding and aiming the gun at my shield, but in such a way it wouldn't hit my body. All the same, I received several nasty burns and had to spend time doing healing work on myself. Burns were easy, though. The first weeks of healing magic had you spend time with the smithies, who always managed to burn themselves. Good healers were well received by them. Eventually, I was confident even the highest strength setting on the gun would bounce off my shields, and would do so even if I didn't know the pulse was coming at me. Of course, I wouldn't know for sure until one hit home by surprise, but I thought I had the shielding set right. I continued to practice it every day. I'd never been truly alone before. And the silence on the ship was at first quite daunting. Village life allowed you a few stolen hours alone, but there was always sisters, cousins, adults, and classes to intrude on good, honest alone time. In the home, solitude was harder to find. Too many kids in too little space. Making alone time became a challenge. But actually being alone for weeks on end? It had never happened to me before. I had to learn new skills. When your life is full of people, and suddenly there are none, and dead bodies don't count, you're suddenly confronted with yourself as your only companion. It's times like these when you discover if you truly like your own company or not, and I found I wasn't all that happy with mine. Who are you really? It only takes a few days before solitude raises such a simple question, but it's a very difficult one to answer. easier, perhaps, when asked later in life, but I sincerely hoped I was still early on in mine. I knew what I could do. I knew what I'd done, a lot of which had landed me in a lot of trouble. I'd watched the other kids, wondered at how they did some things so easily, and wondered why they found other things so hard. And magic. I'd rediscovered it, but in doing so had set myself apart. Girls looked at me strangely, and I didn't see in their faces what I saw when they looked at other boys. I wasn't sure what it was, just they didn't feel the same way about me. And then I was alone. Just me to talk to, just me to fill in the silence. Not that I tried to all the time, since stargazing really doesn't need words. It took time, but I learned to be alone, to like it, and find it comfortable. And suddenly, being alone ended. 7. I woke abruptly. The internal alarm told me something had changed. When my feet hit the deck, I could feel the absence of the slight vibration which indicated the engines were on. So the ship had stopped. I dressed hurriedly, drew my backpack on, and headed for the bridge. I'd added water to my pack in case I needed to hide out somewhere for a while, but I hadn't been able to add food. However they made food for ships, it didn't last if you failed to eat it, and it wasn't edible if you didn't cook it first. Eating might be a challenge in the near future, but for now, avoiding trouble was my main aim. Before reaching the bridge, I slid a shield around myself and added invisibility. My other alarm for someone having come on board hadn't activated yet, but I was taking no chances. The bridge was empty, but the view outside was not. Nearby, a small ship was moving towards. In the distance, though, what I assumed was a space station caught my attention and held it. It was huge and far away, but it was also close by. Getting my head around the contradiction was interrupted by the ship passing out of my view range and shortly after metal-on-metal sounds, which I assumed were docking noises. The alarm went off in my head shortly after. I left the bridge immediately, since anyone who came through would presumably be coming here first, and there was not anywhere there to safely remain concealed. Even if you couldn't be seen, you could still be bumped into or stepped on. There were two sets of boot falls coming towards me, and I headed away from them, taking the long way to the airlock. Exclamations of surprise echoed through the ship. The boot falls split up. The airlock was open, and I walked into what seemed to be the main cabin of a small ship. No one was there, and I peeked into both the front area, where I assumed a pilot would sit, and, with no one there either, peeked into the rear area. I saw plenty of equipment I knew nothing about, monitors displaying stuff I didn't understand, and again, no one else. The main cabin was like what I'd seen on TV, inside airplanes. This one wasn't very big, but there were a dozen seats. Two up front and two sets of boot falls seemed to indicate none of these seats were occupied. I sat in one of the middle rows up against the wall and waited. There was a belt on the seat, presumably for safety purposes, but I'd have to hope it wasn't needed since buckling it, or including it within my invisibility zone, would be a dead giveaway something was wrong. As it was, I was lucky the belt was hanging down on both sides of the seat, and I very carefully made sure it remained visible. Shouts echoed in through the airlock, and I assumed one of them had found the three bodies. I waited, not moving, concentrating on breathing without noise. Eventually, both of them arrived back at the airlock, compared notes, especially wondering why three bodies instead of two or four, although they provided their own scenario for how they died, which didn't include someone else being involved. But then they speculated on why the ship was spotlessly clean, and I had to suppress a shiver. I'd goofed and almost given myself away. One of them speculated about the cleaning bots resetting to default settings once there was no actual person to give them orders, and they'd cleaned up properly once the bodies were stored. It sounded feasible to me, and all I could do was hope it made sense to anyone else they told. One of them came inside, walked into the front section without even a glance around, and after he settled into his seat, the airlock closed and the engines came on. I could see nothing except the cabin I was in, and all I could do was wait. I didn't need to wait very long. Conversation came from up front, which I assumed was docking-related, sounding, as it did, similar to TV plane landing pilot stuff. Obviously, our destination was the station. Similar clunking noises to before, only much louder this time, and the airlock opened again. The pilot swept through and out, and I sat there, wondering how long I should wait before trying to leave. What made me move was the thought the ship might be in constant use, and people needing the seats might come in at any moment. I rose soundlessly, gripped one strap of the backpack with my left hand, and stepped as quietly as I could to the airlock. Outside, I could see no one, but a lot of noise was coming from somewhere. The airlock opened into a long tube, so I carefully walked along it. At the end, I found another open airlock, again with no one around. This one opened into a fairly standard-looking passageway, the sort you'd find in almost any building. It was wide enough for six people to walk side by side without touching each other in the process. The walls seemed to be covered in advertising, although I had little understanding of what. As I walked along, more tubes could be seen, so I assumed I was in a small ship docking area, and each one fed into this passageway, which presumably led into the station proper. I was lucky no one else appeared from any of them, and no one was coming towards either. It took 5 minutes' walk to reach the end. There I found people, of the type I really didn't want to be seen by. They were large, obviously armed, and just as obviously guarding the entrance to the passageway. There was enough noise coming through. I no longer needed to worry about being heard, as long as I didn't hit anything which made noise. The doors were open, fortunately, and I simply walked straight through. Neither of the gorillas on guard so much as glanced my way. It was the first real confirmation my invisibility was actually working. I found myself in yet another passageway, this time with people going both ways along it, and followed it, carefully stepping around people, until I found myself looking out into a large open area several levels below. The noise of many thousands of people, all seemingly bellowing at once in a number of different languages, assaulted my ears. I'd been to shopping centers before, some of them really big, but this was as if every single shopping area in the city I'd been living in had been squashed up together in one place. I had no real understanding of how big it was or even how to measure it. It was huge. It's the only word which fits. The most obvious thing was once I was down there, staying invisible was going to be impossible. I'd be bumped, stepped on, or run over before I'd taken my second step. I waited there, letting people come and go behind me, studying as much as I could see. I set part of my focusing intent on language translation and let what I could hear wash over me, filtering out all the raucous music trying to drown the voices out. Some of it was the language the two slavers had spoken. Several variations of it became apparent, but several others were completely different. I waited until most of what I heard could be understood, and it became apparent the area below me was mostly about food. Which was when my stomach growled, and someone cast a glance in my direction. Sufficiently off-beat to look, but not enough to stop and investigate, I paid more attention to the movement around me. There was a large plant off to one side, so I moved over to it. With some deft timing, I dropped the invisibility as I walked around the plant, hidden by it so those who might see me didn't see the shift, but anyone looking from below simply saw me step up to the rail as if looking for something. I made an effort to appear to be looking, finding, and stepped back into the passageway and followed several people until I found steps leading down. At the bottom of the stairs, I stopped and watched people going past, paying attention to their dress. The last thing I needed was to stand out, but while different, I found what I was wearing to be neutral enough I shouldn't appear to be too different, or not different enough to be worthy of serious attention. A lot of people carried bags of all sorts, including some worn on the back, like mine, and while it appeared to be safe, I tightened my grip on the strap just to be sure no one could pull it off me suddenly. My first challenge was food. I wandered around, looking at the offerings, which varied from delightfully smelling to absolutely disgusting. People ate as they walked, or sat in general areas, all much the same as the shopping centers I was used to. What I didn't have, though, was money to buy food with. I sat at a table nearby a number of food vendors, pulled a bottle of water out of my backpack, and sat there sipping it. I concentrated on observing transactions, trying to look like I was deciding on what to purchase to eat. What I was doing, though, was looking for a way of stealing money, where no one would know it was gone, at least until they tried to use it next time. The first thing I noticed was no one was using any kind of electronic currency. Definitely a good break for me. Stealing something which usually required some form of identification was easy, but usually pointless. But paper money was just as easy to steal, for me anyway, and immediately usable. I spotted a large man spending money, and watched him shove the unused notes into a back pocket. I concentrated on his pocket as he walked away, and the notes moved from his pocket to mine. Over the next 15 minutes, I repeated this a dozen times, moving wallets, billfolds, and cash rolls to my backpack. Since I'd been pushing my luck about someone discovering immediately their money had vanished and making a noise about it, I decided to move. I concentrated my intent on the most common language I'd been hearing people use and set it to default what I spoke. First, I went up to one of the vendors, pulled the notes from my pocket, passed over one with a number bigger than the food cost, and received a wrapped something, which looked like meat inside some sort of bread. I took back a small amount of change and stepped away, ripping off the top of the wrapping like I'd seen others doing, and began walking away. The food was tasty, and I stopped at another set of tables to sit and finish it. The next requirement was relieving myself and needing a little privacy. I continued on until I found the first set of convenience rooms. A few seconds to determine men's from women's, and I sought a stall where I could be unobserved for a short time. After using the facilities, I dug my ill-gotten gains out of my backpack, hid some of the larger notes in my shoes, and made up a billfold with the rest. The wallets I'd have to dump. Using my magic sight, I cast around the room on the other side of the door for a bin and transferred what I didn't want into it. So far, so good. I exited the cubicle, washed my hands, took a grip on the backpack again, and walked out. And walked straight into someone passing just outside the door and bounced back into the door, closing behind me. When I had my balance again, I saw four long lines of people going past. They were chained together. For a moment, all I could think of was there but for the grace went I. The last one on the line next to me turned to look at me as she went past. She was amazingly beautiful, but clad in rags, and like the rest, shackled hand and foot with some sort of collar around her neck. Her eyes raked mine as if begging me to help her. And then she was gone. 8. Okay, I admit it. I turned immediately to follow her. Yes, my head had turned to follow a pretty face, a damsel in distress, someone apparently needing rescuing. Stupid. Yes. Very. I did it anyway, and there was no single thought on the subject at all. By the time my brain caught up with my feet, I was at the very least committed to finding out more about her, if I could. I wasn't totally stupid about it. I followed a fair way behind. I bought food twice more and did some serious magical shoplifting. There were a range of items most people were carrying, and I slowly added them to my backpack as conditions allowed. I only took something where there were so many on show, one going missing would never be noticed without doing a full count first. One of the last was a mid-level pad, which seemed to be the local equivalent of computer. Well away from the store it came from, it took a bit of blind depackaging inside my backpack before the pad could be pulled out. I turned it on, using the only obvious button, and it started asking for information. I gave it what I could and ignored the rest. It smoothly connected to the station net and began downloading updates. I slid it into a pocket and let it update itself as I continued to follow the shackled lines. After a while, it appeared the prisoners were being displayed around the station rather than going anywhere in particular. So while trailing behind them, I had a good introduction to many of the areas. We'd left food behind some time ago, and now we left electronics behind as well. I made note of clothing stores worth visiting at some later time. At one point, the pad buzzed, and I pulled it out. The updates were complete, and a full map of the station was showing, with the level I was on highlighted. I scrolled it around, since not even a single level could display all at once, and my eyes stopped on one large area labeled Slave Auctions. So now I knew where we'd end up. Given how long it had taken to get this far, I made an estimate of how long it would still take to get there, and how long it would take me, taking what I thought was a shortcut. This gave me some time for clothes shopping. I turned and headed back the way I'd come, stopping at the nearest of the noted stores and going in. When I came out a half hour later, I was wearing new clothes in current, if plain, fashion. I'd taken the opportunity while changing to move items to my person instead of in my backpack. The most noticeable was the pouch for the pad, normally worn in either a hip pouch off a belt or a thigh pouch attached to a gun holster. As I didn't have a gun and didn't want a gun, I'd gone for the hip belt option. The backpack was now bigger, as I'd needed extra space for my original clothes, which I decided to keep. It was also somewhat heavier now, so I added a no-weight command to the enlargement intent. After I managed to pull the pack down from the ceiling, I modified it to be neutral weight instead. I also changed its color slightly to also be more neutral here. While hunting the racks, I'd made a pass through women's wear and magically copied a generic, loose-fitting dress of about the size I thought she could wear. She was in rags, and I did this on the off chance she'd need something better in a hurry. I was guessing, but days in the laundry doing everyone's as punishment meant I did have an appreciation for dress sizes. It was sitting on top of the backpack now, so it could be pulled out rapidly if need be. Satisfied with my own change in appearance, I hurried through my shortcut, taking every opportunity to relieve people of their excess cash without taking any risks, and arrived at the entrance to the slave auctions area, nicely in time for the slave strings to pass me by again. This time I paid attention to the shackles and the collars, which I found to be much more interesting and important. Each collar enclosed the neck tightly, with a large bulge on the front. I'd need to find out what they were really for before I tried to do anything with one. The girl made eye contact with me again as she went past, and I thought I saw recognition on her face. On the other hand, though, she was looking at everyone, desperately looking for someone to save her. Or, at least, that's what I thought she was doing. Oh, and she wasn't a girl, really. With more time to check her out, she seemed to be a number of years older than I was, which made her a woman, not a girl. It also highlighted the fact I was a boy and not a man, which also highlighted how desperate she obviously was and how stupid I was being. I followed the strings along, and at long last they disappeared into a closed-off area behind a stage. The lights for the stage came on, and a time was displayed for when the auction would begin. I took a seat and waited, noting the seating area was rapidly filling up. While I waited, I checked out the station's descriptions of the auction process. Very flashy ads showed me how they were conducted. I went looking for any reference to the collars and found they had two purposes. The lower setting on the control wand the purchaser received jolted the wearer with enough of a shock to drop them. It was usually used as a punishment. The second level had options, which determined how far away the collar could get before it blew the head off the wearer. Charming. It explained why I'd only seen two expressions on the shackled, resignation and desperation. I made a mental note if ever threatened with one of those collars, I would do everything I could to avoid whoever tried to put one on me, up to and including killing them. It was something of a self-revelation to find I would be prepared to kill. And then I wondered why, when soldiers and battle mages were expected to kill, and I'd wanted to be a battle mage. 2 years in a non-violent place had obviously changed the way I looked at things, but then I had already killed, so where had this surprise come from? I had defended myself, and I'd overdone it, so it was different, since I hadn't intended to kill. But now I realized if they came for me, I'd need to kill, and killing here would drop me in deep shit, given at best the local police were themselves a form of pirate. There would be no help from any quarter, and any help offered would most likely have ulterior motives attached, and thus be suspect. I did have one advantage, though. I'd seen no sign of any form of magic here, which hopefully meant battle magic would surprise them. I wished I knew some. I'd taken on 3 mages by myself and survived, 2 armed thugs and survived, but nothing like serious numbers of hostiles all at once. I suddenly wondered what the hell I thought I was doing. Save the girl, obviously, but then what? I needed a plan. Buying her would obviously be the easiest way, but for how much? I looked for the day's auction lots and found the list. Her face was the last one, and my heart sank at what the expected opening bid should be. I focused on my backpack and asked it for a total of how much money was in it. It turned out I'd been more successful than I thought, and could indeed open the bidding and take it a short distance. It was a lot of money, though. The good thing was, all payments had to be made in cash. The bad was, you needed to have your bid's worth of cash on you, and if, after purchase, it was found you didn't have enough, you were in serious trouble, and likely to be the next item on offer after they re-auctioned your purchase. I needed to double-check with my eyes, so I sought out the nearest facilities and shut myself in a cubicle again. I sorted the notes from highest to lowest and counted them 3 times to be sure of the exact total. I rechecked on what the opening bid was expected to be, in case there was an expected successful bid amount listed, but there wasn't. I had enough to bid a couple of times, depending on how fast the bidding went up. The main problem I saw was how beautiful she looked, even in rags, which would drive her price up. Hopefully her lack of resignation would be seen as a sign of a troublemaker and keep her price down. And then I saw the list of attributes under each entry, showing skills and reasons to bid higher. She was a pilot. 9. There is always a reason for why we do things, even if we're clueless about it. Sometimes we find out, sometimes we don't. A pretty girl was something I desired, but didn't actually need, and wasn't really any use here and now. But a pilot, on the other hand, would get me off this station and back to somewhere more civilized, maybe even back home. By the time I returned to the auction area, the seats were all taken, and a good-sized crowd had gathered around them. I managed to worm my way through to the back of the seats, where I would be able to be seen by the auctioneer. With a fanfare, the man himself appeared, and made a show of introducing himself. He played to the crowd, obviously knowing a lot of the bidders personally. Lot 1 was a man, and he was paraded around for all to see what remained of his shirt coming off when the bidding began to flag. I paid little attention. I was focusing my magic sight on the collar. I studied it from the outside all around, and when I felt sure I had the whole shape in my mind properly, I looked inside. The detonator was obviously in the front section, and the explosive went all the way around. For what it could do, there wasn't all that much of it, but obviously it was enough. As the lots were sold, I pondered the best way to remove it. I could just break the detonator section, but I had the horrible thought this might just make it explode anyway. In fact, any tampering at all might make it go off. I was going to have to remove it completely, the same way I'd removed the gun, only this time I couldn't afford to take more than the collar, or, like the hand vanishing had killed the pirate, it would kill her. Still, with plenty of time, I cast my sight into the rooms behind, looking for where they kept their electronics, and found a room full of boxes with one of them open and showing a handful of collars sitting in special recesses which kept them apart. I concentrated on making one of them vanish. It did, but some of the packing around it did as well. The next one vanished with less packing, and the third one vanished, leaving an empty hole. I did a fourth and fifth, just to be sure. arise in the volume around me, signaled the first of the women being brought out. Instead of rags, she'd obviously been cleaned up and was now wearing a semi-translucent shirt and skirt, which emphasized figure without quite showing everything she had. Predictably, both were torn off her at key times in the bidding to get it moving upward again. This proved to be the pattern and explained why so many onlookers were present. All of the women ended up naked, and after purchase were led away naked. Only a handful of the purchasers immediately clothed their purchase, although in all but one case it was only with enough to cover the basics. At last, she was led out. The crowd actually went silent. She stood in the required place defiantly and raked the crowd with a look which showed her total contempt of every single person there. The auctioneer made a slight cough, and she turned her look on him. He tapped a control wand on his lectern, finger paused over one of the buttons, and her face shattered, defiance gone in an instant. The crowd returned to its normal volume as the auctioneer called for a first bid. Someone seated at the front held up a hand and shouted a number. It was a full 50% higher than the stated opening bid should be. It had shock value, and for a moment, no one else bid. I took the opportunity to raise my arm and flap at the auctioneer. He didn't see me, but one of his minions did and called it out. Those who could turned to see who was bidding, and laughter ensued. The girl took her horrified look away from the first bidder and looked at me. The look faltered as hope flickered for an instant and died as a third bidder entered the contest. Her eyes shot to him, and the horrified look intensified. The first bidder responded, the auctioneer looked at me, and I nodded, and the third bidder upped it again. Now I was out, but I continued bidding for another three rounds, and when looked at for the fourth, I shook my head. Any hope she had left died visibly. The death of hope is the worst of all things which can happen to you. I felt her pain, and real pain slashed across my temples and faded to a headache. Two other bidders took over when I dropped out, with the second one dropping out as well a few bids later. Her top was ripped off her, baring her upper body, and the bidding intensified again. I could see real hatred working on her face now, and the auctioneer had to remind her of her place again. I stared at her, willing her to look back at me. But she only had eyes for those bidding, and it faltered again as the first bidder retained the highest bid and another one didn't come. Predictably, her skirt was ripped away at this point, leaving her stark naked and forced to turn on the spot. The crowd saw everything she had. The way the crowd reacted almost broke her. If lust was a liquid, everyone would have drowned. She cast her eyes everywhere, looking for some form of hope, and suddenly our eyes met. I mimed pulling the collar off her and swishing it away, and followed it by mouthing the words, "Prepare to run," and looked towards the exit behind me. The pilot side of her must have kicked in, as she made no sign of having understood me, but her bearing changed slightly as her muscles tensed. The auctioneer misinterpreted her movement and tapped his wand again. She let her head fall forward, and now he couldn't see the collar. She remained that way, apparently finally broken, as he started on the final bangs of the gavel, trying hard to get one more bid. I could see one of her eyes fixed on me. I waited. As he was about to bang the gavel one last time, I removed her collar and shackles, mouthed "run," and turned away, heading for the exit, my expression like someone who'd failed at an important mission for someone else. Behind me, the gavel missed its mark and banged the auctioneer's other hand. His curse was overlaid by "Stop her!" from several minions, and at the door I turned to find her halfway up the aisle coming towards me. Behind her, a guard was raising a gun. I sighed. The gun vanished, as did three more in successive seconds, as I removed the others I could see, dropping them into my backpack in case of need later. Someone in the aisle moved to stop her, and I force-punched hard enough to knock him down into a dozen people behind him. I did it again, just before she reached the end of the aisle, so she had a path to take towards the exit. I waited for her outside the door, and as she came level, I began to run with her, wrapping an invisibility cloak around both of us. She didn't look at me, just ran as hard as she could. I had trouble keeping up. My head was on fire, and she was faster than I was. "Don't get ahead of me!" I squeaked at her. She collided with someone, who bounced off her, and it slowed her enough for me to catch up. Her eyes caught mine. "They can't see us," I croaked. Her eyes suggested she didn't believe, but she nodded and kept on running. I began wheezing quietly, my body not used to this level of exercise. As a male convenience sign became visible, I took her arm. She flinched. "Stop," I said. "In there." I pointed in the door. She pulled the door open, went in, and I followed. Inside, there was luckily no one there, and I dropped the invisibility. I pulled open a stall door and pointed in as I pulled my backpack off. She hesitated, but saw me pulling cloth and went in. I threw the dress to her and shut the door. It wasn't for me, but in case someone came in. I concentrated on the type of footwear I'd seen a lot of women wearing, guessed her size, and a pair of shoes appeared. I pushed them under the door. "Backpack," she barked at me. "Huh? A dress is not enough. I need to look completely different." I paused, not wanting to lose contact with mine, especially with what was in it. I put it down, concentrated, and another just like it appeared next to it. I handed in the copy. She came out, sliding it onto her back. For a moment, she looked puzzled as she looked at my backpack going back on my back, but whatever was in her mind was quickly replaced. The next look she gave me would have curdled milk. "Let's get something straight. I owe you for helping me escape, and I'll pay my debt, but if you ever touch me again, I'll kill you." My mouth fell open. I let it swing for a moment and closed it again. "Understood. We need to hurry." "Why?" "Because the next sail after me was going to be my ship." 10. We hurried, hopefully looking like brother and sister late for some family do. We were mainly walking side by side, but in reality, I was following her and trying hard to keep up. My head ached, and I regretted not taking a tablet when I'd had the chance. The problem with the tablets is that they can't be taken too often without serious side effects to a situation like this one. I needed to be functional in order to stay alive, not dropping from mind-altering tablet-caused fatigue. One a day was my normal, and the time for today was approaching, but something about what I'd done had brought it on early. I just didn't know what. It could be stress warping the energy flow. I mulled it over as we walked. No one paid us any attention, not even a pair of station police, who must by now be on the lookout for us. Of course, they might be so sure they knew where we were going, there was no need to look. I had no idea where we were now, as she'd led me into a part of the station I hadn't been to before, but all the same, I recognized docking tubes as we went past some of them. These were much further spaced apart, so I guessed this was a larger ship docking area. I wondered what sort of ship hers was. I didn't get to wonder long, as she broke her own no-touch rule by dragging me to a stop against a wall before a corner. There was no one else around us, so stopping wasn't suspicious. Yet. She peeked around the corner. "You look," she muttered. "Fast. Don't be seen. We changed places, and I looked around the corner for a few seconds. They had known exactly where we were going. There were a full 20 men there, all brandishing guns. The airlock behind them was closed, so just walking through them was out. She looked me in the eyes. "I don't know how you do what you do," she whispered, "but can you get us through them?" "Through them is easy. Getting in the airlock without them seeing it open is difficult, and what happens if they changed the lock code, which I assume it has been?" She looked annoyed, as if she hadn't thought of it. "Can you pick a lock?" "I can remove a lock. Maybe put it back after, if I have something to copy, but the main problem is them seeing us open the door and following us in. Can you take them?" "I can try." "Don't try. Do it." There was command in her voice, the sort I'd heard a lot when I did my military training. Questions for later. I nodded to her, held my hand up to stop her following me, and stepped around the corner, invisibility in place. No one moved as I walked into the center of the docking area, which was a good-sized space. I stopped, pondering how to do this. Normally, I punched straight ahead. I could do that here, but 20 punches was going to take too long, so I needed 20 shots at once. I gathered as much power as I could muster, held the locations of all 20 men in my mind, and threw all I could into a 20-sided punch. 15 of them went down and didn't get up, the rest staggered, 2 more going belatedly down, while the remaining 3 kept their feet and looked around for what hit them. I hit them again, one by one. They went down. "Go!" I yelled. She came running around the corner and beat me to the airlock. By the time I'd managed a slow stride to get there, she'd punched in her code and the door was opening. I sighed and followed her in. I was completely done in. I needed rest. No, I had to rest. There was no rest. If anything, we'd just managed to complete the easy part. 11. Her fist hit the close button as soon as we were in, and the hatch stopped opening and started closing again. She waited for it to lock shut and changed the code herself. She took off running towards a set of stairs close by and was at the top and disappearing before I was even halfway up. Running was now beyond me. At the top, I simply sank into a sitting position on the top step and shucked my pack. Water and tablets came out, a tablet went down, and I emptied the water bottle. "Where the hell are you?" came down from above. I put my tablet bottle away, hoisted my pack, and started up the next level of stairs. 2 more up, I came to the top and turned towards where her voice was still coming. I was wheezing quietly, and my sight was blurring a little. Bad signs when combined with throbbing temples. If I didn't stop soon, I'd be throwing up as well. "In here!" bellowed her voice. I shambled in as fast as I could and stopped. Obviously the bridge. It was huge in comparison to the last one. She was in one of the chairs in the middle. She waved me to one next to her. I removed my backpack, let it thunk to the floor, sank into the chair with a sigh of relief, and found it was quite comfortable. "Can you cut metal?" she barked at me. "Possibly. What needs cutting?" I wasn't about to tell her I was done in. "The docking clamps on the station side. Ours are disengaged, but I can't ask them to set us loose. They're already trying to cut into the airlock." "I don't know what a docking clamp is. Can you show me?" A screen on one side lit up, showing an image of a ship docked to a station from the perspective of being in space between them. She pointed to the ship-side couplings. "Those are the ships. Don't touch those," she pointed again. "Those are the stations. Cut them or remove them without damaging the ship." The finger moved again. "Them, too. The facility's hoses are better cut than yanked loose." I gulped, staring at the image. She didn't want much. The floor began to vibrate slightly as the engines came up. She hit a switch, and the ship image on the other side of the bridge showed a shield around all but the front of the ship. And suddenly, I felt much better. I reached out to the energy of the shield and let it flow through my being. The migraine halved in intensity, my fatigue fell away, and I began to concentrate my intent on the image. My sight expanded to encompass the front of the ship and the station next to it. The clamps were there, and suddenly they weren't. The hoses vanished as well. "Go," I said. The ship immediately backed away from the station. Stuff popped up on the central screen, overlaying the receding station view. I sat back, feeling the ship with my senses. It was the weirdest feeling. It was like my body had expanded to be the size of the ship. I explored it, following the shield energy to the engines and back to the power plants. Barely being used as they were, the energy coursed through me. For a moment, I was back in the moment before I transported myself away from the mages attacking me, the feeling being similar to all the energy I was using to make the move happen. Only this was an order of magnitude greater. "What a rush," I murmured, and she shot me a look. "Feeling better?" she asked, sounding sarcastic. "Yes." "Good, because any minute now, someone is going to start throwing things at us." 12. "Damn them!"
"What?"
"They took everything from my cargo hold." She popped up a schematic of this deck. "Check the first stateroom to see if my stuff is still there." It wasn't a request. I shifted my awareness and looked inside. Nothing there.
"Fuck 'em!"
The ship jerked around and started back towards the station.
"What are you going to do?"
She was already doing it. The main screen was now showing a list of things for sale, lots of them tagged for auction on station, if not bought first.
"There. Can you find that pallet of stuff?"
"What do you think I am?"
"I don't care what you are. Can you do it or not?"
This was something I'd never done. First, I needed to focus on the list, then jump from the list to where it was, view it, and what now?
"Where do you want it?"
"First stateroom."
I checked it again and moved it. "Put the pallets on either side in the cargo hold. I suspect they're my food stocks."
"Where in the ship? I need a plan showing the deck and the position."
They popped up. I moved both pallets.
"These next."
She'd highlighted a series of containers.
"Let me guess. Your cargo?"
"As far as I can tell, yes. Try and stack them neatly." I looked at her open-mouthed for a moment and closed it. I drew more on the energy in the shields, and one by one the cargo hold began to fill up.
"Hey, don't do that!"
"What?"
"Drain my shields is what. We're going to need them in about a minute."
"Why a minute?"
The ship had turned again and was now moving away from the station. A view popped up showing what was behind us. The station's police force had finally reacted to the ship leaving, and three ships were now coming around from behind the station.
"Now what?"
I asked her, looking worried.
"Now they throw things at us. How much do you know about ships?"
"Nothing."
"Figures."
"What should I know?"
"How to blow up missiles before they hit us would be useful."
"I'm open to suggestions."
I should have been careful with word selection. I received a blast of verbiage about missiles, none of which I understood, but once again gave me an impression of someone military in origin.
"Just show me where one might be vulnerable."
A missile speck popped up. She jabbed at it with a finger.
"Poke a hole in this wall, and it should blow up."
I thought about it for a moment. It seemed easy enough.
"Where do I draw power from, if not the shields?"
"Why do you need power?"
"I could do it if it was sitting on the deck here. Just holding sight of a missile in space would take all I had. Doing something inside it is going to take more. Doing it more than once is going to take a lot more."
She looked at me with a not understanding this look on her face.
How far can you shine a light into the distance? She nodded. Yes, as far as the power source will let you. It's the same with what I can do. The more complex you make it, the more energy it requires. She was already pressing buttons. Use this. It's a secondary power plant used by the container loading system. I hope it's enough. It was enough. I let go of the shields, and the indicators began to rise immediately. The generator wasn't anything like as powerful, but I drew on it without any resistance, since it wasn't being used for anything else. Launch! I concentrated on the icon showing the missile and shifted my awareness to the missile itself, going inside, seeking the wall, and vanishing it. The missile exploded.
Keep going!
There were 23 more. 13. The last three hit us, but the shields held. The problem was it took me too long to do each one at a time, and they were far enough apart, each explosion had no impact on the others. Can you punch a hole in each ship? In theory. Where is it softest? Bridge windows, maybe the airlocks. They'll be looking to board us, so there'll be someone on the bridge and someone at the main airlock. I cast my sight at the nearest ship and observed the bridge windows. Inside, there were two figures. In doing so, I became aware of the ship's own shielding. I grinned. Whatever you thought of, get it done before the next salvo launches. The main docking airlock was beneath the bridge. There were six people there. I gathered all the energy I could from the other ship's shields, and as if I was standing next to the hull, I punched twice. The ship staggered, debris came pouring out of the two holes, and it continued on its way, now off on a direction away from us.
Do it again, fast!
I did it again, fast, and a third time. The last ship launched its missiles a second time, but these were easy for me to deal with. Show me how to turn the engines off, I asked her. How much of the bridges are left? Not a lot of actual damage, but I can't tell if the controls still work. Schematics came up. She pointed at a control panel. That bank of switches in the engine room. Turning them off will shut down main power. Why do you want to? I grinned at her.
Aren't they pirates?
Yes. What has that to do with it? How would you like their firepower? And their engines?
What the hell are you talking about?
I didn't answer her immediately, but took a few moments toggling switches. All three ships stopped accelerating and remained ballistic. I looked at her. This ship has no defenses, right?
Right.
It's a standard sort of trader ship.
Yes?
You could never afford to upgrade it.
I was working on that.
So we have three perfectly good ships out there. Why don't we take them and use them to upgrade?
You're crazy.
No, I'm not. Admittedly, I know nothing about ships at all, but I should be able to position the ships against your hull wherever you want them put and join all four in a way they could be made to work together. She thought about it and sighed.
Damn it. I didn't want any of this, but you're right. It's too good an opportunity to pass up. What do you need?
Something which shows me where to place each ship. Step one is mount them in the right place. If you can show me where, I think I can make them secure.
And step two
will be up to you. I can probably put the holes to connect things in given time, but only you can connect the systems of the ships together.
I could probably jury-rig something to fire the missiles, but anything else is beyond me.
Do you know anyone who could help?
Yes.
She went silent, and her face went hard.
Who?
Not now. Let's get these prizes, and work out how to do the next steps later. How close do you need to be?
No idea.
Closer the better?
Figures.
Well, we have one thing going for us at the moment.
What?
These three were obviously the only armed ships docked here. Nothing else is coming after us, at least for now. Shut up and let me work. I sat there, using my sight to examine the three ships.
They were almost identical, a lot of the differences now determined by how I'd damaged each one. There was no life on any of them now, and no air. For the time it took, and to see if I could, I patched the holes. By the time we'd matched course and speed with the nearest ship, she had a diagram on a screen showing how she'd mount the three ships on her own. The result was going to almost double the mass of her ship, and I could see she'd tried hard to keep the engines aligned and all the missile turrets free to fire. "Drop the shields." She did so. I summoned all the energy I could from my remaining generator, wondering if turning off the power on the ships had been a good idea or not. I reached out as if to grab the ship in my hand and gently pulled it towards us. It moved, but not in